Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Foreign Combinations and Lost Profits Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On April 16, 2018, the Supreme Court heard argument in Western GECO versus Ion Geophysical Corporation, a case that the court again took up after having remanded it to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit for reconsideration in light of the Supreme Court's 2016 decision, Halo Electronics versus Pulse Electronics. In 2015, Western GECO sued Ion for patent infringement. The jury found in favor of Western GECO, awarding it $93.4 million in lost profits and a reasonable royalty of $12.5 million. Because the jury also found that Ion was subjectively reckless in its infringement, Western GECO petitioned the court for additional damages available under applicable law for willful infringement, invoking the then-applicable two-part test set out in the Federal Circuit's In Re Seagate decision, which is both a subjective and an objective component. Ion countered by arguing that neither component could be satisfied, and the district court agreed as to the objective component, concluding that Ion's positions had been reasonable and not objectively baseless, and therefore would not support a finding of willful infringement under Seagate. On appeal, the Federal Circuit reversed the award of lost profits, concluding that Western GECO was not entitled to lost profits resulting from foreign uses of its patented invention. As to the issue of enhanced damages for willful infringement, however, the Federal Circuit affirmed the judgment of the District Court. Western GECO then sought certiorari from the Supreme Court. After issuing its decision in Halo Electronics, which addressed the standard for enhanced damages, the Supreme Court granted the petition, vacated the Federal Circuit's judgment, and remanded the case for reconsideration in light of the reasoning in Halo Electronics. The Federal Circuit in turn reinstated the part of its previous decision reversing the lost profits award, but otherwise remanded the case to the district court to consider whether the evidence at trial was sufficient to support the jury's finding of subjective willfulness. If so, the Federal Circuit indicated, the district court must then exercise its discretion to determine whether enhanced damages were warranted. In the meantime, Western GECO successfully petitioned the Supreme Court to grant certiorari on whether the federal court erred in holding that lost profits arising from prohibited combinations occurring outside the United States are categorically unavailable in cases which patent infringement is proven under Title 35 of the United States Code, Section 271F. That provision makes it an act of patent infringement to supply components of a patented invention from the United States, knowing or intending that the components be combined outside of the United States in a manner that would infringe the patent in such combination occurring within the United States. And now, to discuss the case, we have Stephen Yelderman, professor of law at Notre Dame Law School.
On Monday, April 16th, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in Western GECO versus Ion Geophysical. I have on good authority it is Western GECO, not Western Gecko, so anyone who says the latter does not know what they're talking about. This case involves patent damages for foreign consequences. Specifically, whether patent holders can introduce evidence of the harm they suffered abroad as a result of the defendant's infringing actions here in the United States. Western GECO owns a patent on technology useful for performing seismic surveys of the ocean floor, useful for oil field exploration. The defendant, Ion Geophysical, infringed these patents through acts taken in Texas and Louisiana. Western GECO introduced evidence of lost contract work that the company says it could have performed on the high seas, but for Ion's infringement. On the basis of that evidence, a jury awarded $12.5 million in reasonable royalties, and the sum at stake in this case, $93.4 million in lost profits. Ion argued, and the Federal Circuit agreed, that these lost profits were not cognizable, as they were based on profits the plaintiff would have made outside the United States. The Supreme Court granted certiorari to address this question about patent damages for foreign losses. In the interest of full disclosure, I filed a law professor amicus brief in support of the petitioner here, arguing that the lost profits award should be restored. That is, I came in favor of the patent holder. This case happens to involve some unusual facts. It's not a run-of-the-mill direct infringement case under 35 U.S.C. 271A, but a case under 271F, which creates liability in some circumstances when a defendant exports components of a patented invention for combination outside the United States. Now, if based on that description, extraterritorial alarm bells are going off, they should. In fact, in 1972, the Supreme Court held in Deep South Packing that conduct exactly like this doesn't infringe the direct infringement provision of 271A, since U.S. patent law only applies to infringing conduct inside the United States. 271F, however, was added in response to Deep South, and no one disputes that the presumption against extraterritoriality was rebutted by that act of Congress, and that the defendant, ION Geophysical, here can be held liable as an infringer. The only question at this point is one of remedy. Now, this case could be decided on narrower grounds, but I think the best way to think of the problem here is by generalizing the facts a little bit. Imagine that the defendant, in fact, was manufacturing and exporting the complete invention, therefore putting this case within the more familiar infringement provision of 271A. Now, imagine these exported, completed goods go outside the United States, and outside the United States, they compete with the patent holder's business and result in various business losses to the U.S. patent holder. The question is, at the remedy stage, can a court take notice of harm done outside the United States? Or must damages for U.S. patent infringement be based on consequences that played out exclusively here within the United States? To put that same question in doctrinal terms, do we have to apply the presumption against extraterritoriality to remedial provisions? Or in this context, is it enough that we've satisfied the extraterritoriality analysis a first time at the liability stage? Now, the defendants here, who are trying to get out from underneath that $93.4 million lost profits verdict, have two good arguments at their back, both of which happen to start with the words RJR Nabisco. In that 2016 case, the court held that even if the presumption against extraterritoriality had been overcome with respect to RICO's substantive provisions, the presumption applied again to RICO's cause of action provision. In other words, recently the Supreme Court has already held that the presumption against extraterritoriality applies to different provisions within the same larger statute. Now, does that mean the presumption necessarily applies to damages provisions? No. But there's also some nice language in RJR Nabisco suggesting that the presumption applies to statutes that, quote, afford relief. Perhaps that means that the court has already said that damages provisions are subject to the presumption against extraterritoriality. Now, the respondents rely on this language a lot, perhaps too much. In fact, in the oral argument, Justice Alito at one point, who authored the majority opinion in RJR Nabisco, specifically asked the respondents to answer his question without saying the words RJR Nabisco. On the other side, against the presumption of extraterritoriality, the petitioner has common sense. Now, those are the petitioner's words, not my editorializing. But the petitioner repeatedly invoked hypotheticals involving running down the French ambassador and asking, how do we assess damages for a tort like this? If the French ambassador gets shipped off to a French hospital, and bills from those hospitals come back, do we have to ignore them because they happen to have been incurred outside the United States? Now, the same hypothetical can actually work for lost profits too, if you just change the facts a little bit. Instead of the French ambassador, imagine a French tourist is run down on a DC sidewalk and loses his job in France, say working in a factory. When it comes time for that tort suit, can we take notice of the profits, the income that he would have made by keeping his job back home in France? Or do we have to put those aside because taking notice of those damages would be an extraterritorial reach of U.S. law? I sense in the argument there was not a lot of enthusiasm for a bright-line territorial rule because of hypotheticals like these, which suggest that bright-line rule could leave very real injuries uncompensated. In fact, at one point, Justice Kennedy asked Respondent's Counsel, well, your position is that the petitioner is not entitled to full compensation for its injury? That's your position? At first, Respondent's Counsel tried to avoid answering that question point blank, but when pressed, he actually responded yes, as a consequence of the application of the presumption against extraterritoriality. Because there didn't seem to be a lot of appetite for leaving injuries uncompensated, Most of the discussion thereafter focused on a limiting principle and the possibility that looking to foreign harms might result in runaway damages, particularly if multiple countries' patent systems end up getting their hands in the pie. Justice Breyer in particular expressed concern about multi-component inventions and the possibility that, since parts might come from all over the world, you could end up having patent holders from any number of jurisdictions claiming lost profits and the ultimate complete invention. It's kind of an international version of the royalty stacking or patent holdup problem that has been much discussed in the domestic context. And it might be no accident that Justice Breyer is asking this question at this exact moment in time. The court's actually holding a cert petition right now in a case called Mentor Graphics versus Eve USA, which seeks review of the question of how lost profits should be apportioned when it comes to a multi-component product. So it might be no accident that the court is asking these questions at this particular moment in time. That said, by the end of the argument, there seemed to be a coalition of justices emerging that supported using traditional tools of but-for causation and proximate causation as the limiting principle in cases like these. Finally, a little tidbit from this argument that's gotten a lot of attention. The respondent mistakenly suggested at one point that this case had been brought in the Eastern District of Texas. Paul Clement, who's petitioner's counsel, led off his rebuttal time by correcting that error, pointing out that in fact the case had been brought in the Southern District of Texas. He then went on to explain, "It may be a pedantic point, but the Eastern District of Texas has a certain implication to it that I wanted to clarify." The transcript indicates laughter here. Ouch. So, in short, it was a bad day for the French ambassador and also the Eastern District of Texas. But by the end of the day, patent damages appear to have emerged unscathed.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.